think I put it before a lot. But I think it's good. That may be a good idea. So I think I did. I think it's
not a good idea. I think it's a good idea.
Thank you. de a lényeg az, hogy ugye azt kell kicsit elgondolni, hogy ez metodikailag pozitív kinyitott. Tehát itt ez egyszerűnek a kinyitott. És valójában az van, hogy
Thank you. Mecskem van nálad.
Látom a
valószínűleg igen.
Próbáljuk.
Died within a couple of months if they don't do it.
So after the operation, the patient becomes seizure free immediately, and the surgeon saw that everything is okay. They made the routine psychological test with them, and he spoke continuously. He was laughing. He was kind. Everything. They start to be suspicious when the doctor who actually interviewed him were called to a telephone. Back then, of course, there were no cell phones. And when he returned 5 minutes later, Henry apparently didn't recognize him. And apparently he showed that he never ever saw this guy. The very person, the very same person who made the interview with them 5 minutes ago. And of course later they started to examine this case in more details. And it turned out that indeed, HM, from the onset of the operation, was not able to record any new events or autobiographic data in his life. So, but even very serious ones. So his parents deceased later, and he could never ever remember that his parents are not living any longer. So no new words, no new persons. His spatial navigation was completely corrupted. He basically had to live in a sanatorium, in a small room. And he had to lead to lunch every day because he was not able to learn the routes to the lunch room. Interestingly, he was able to navigate in this small flat, so that he could do, but nothing more. He failed basically no recognition test, where the presented items and the questioning was longer than 5 minutes. And interestingly, he had. Not all. These are, of course, anterograde amnesia, meaning that new events, new memory tracing should be established after the operation. But he had also retrograde amnesia, meaning that he didn't remember in the previous 11 years of his life. He remembered his childhood and also the secondary school, but nothing from these 11 years. And this was basically the summary of Scoville and Milner, who described the case that he was forgetting of the events of daily life as quickly as they occur. And he lived 50 more years. He was a very kind person, but this condition didn't change at all. So apparently, unlike in many other cases where after a brain injury you have a spontaneous recovery of many lost functions, in case of memory disruption, this was not the case. Interestingly, this is just the MRI and the drawing of AGL brain. This is the coronal section of the human brain. This is the cartoon, and this would be the hippocampus. And as you can see, in both cases, in both sides, the hippocampus are missing, together with some of the entorhinal cortex and the caudal part of the amygdala. Of course, ever since, no bilateral hippocampal lesion is done. If you do the hippocampal lesions unilaterally, then there are hardly any effect on memory performances. There are some slight disturbances. This is why it is absolutely critical to determine that where is the seizure focus and which is the middle focus. But interestingly, not all types of memory was impaired in case of HM. Of course, the memory of kind, nice events was gone, but he was very good in what we call mirror drawing. So the task is very simple here. We put
mirror in front of you, and you can't see your hand only through the mirror, and the task is to outline any given shape. And of course, first you make many mistakes because you move the hand into the wrong direction, but after a while with practice, you can very easily learn to draw in mirrors. This is called mirror drawing. So, as you can see here, these are the three consecutive D's and the number of errors made, and HM made considerable improvement even within a day, and much better next day, and in the third day he hardly did any. Meaning that he is able to learn this task. Of course, the truly funny thing is that, of course, every morning the person has to explain what the task is, because HM is not able to learn new events, so of course he doesn't remember that he ever did mirror drawing task. So both first day, second day, third day, it is so that this is the task, this is the mirror, this is the pencil, yes. Still, his performance is getting better and better. There are a couple of other pieces I would like to show about the selectivity of these memory impairments, and this would be what we call perceptual priming. So, in this test, there are two versions of recalling words which you just learned. These are usually done in using 20 words in a row. One of them is basically you read the 20 words, and what we call is the free recall. And the question the patients are asked, what did you read? So exactly what words did you read? So in this case, of course, the patient has to remember the entire situation, that I was sitting here, I read this and this and this word. So it's a quite complex contextual learning. And hippocompletion basically impairs this, what we call free recall. In case of perceptual priming, what basically they do is that you read the 20 words, and after it, they show you the three first letters of the words, and the question they ask, what words comes to your mind, right? And of course, in case of absent, many other things can come into your mind, the abstinent or whatever, absent or whatever. But in this case, of course, most of the people, including the MSX, will fill this word with the word they were presented before. And interestingly, using this task, there is no difference between the control and the hippocompletion patients. The reason is that in this case, there is basically, it's a very simple sensory association, and apparently hippocampus is not needed for this simple sensory association, and as I showed you before, it's not needed for the motor learning as well. So of course this raises the question whether indeed we have different types of memory, can we categorize them at all, and apparently we can have different memory systems as well. So, indeed, memories are classified based on these types of study as many, many, many others to three broad categories. One of them is called motor memory. It's also referred to as procedural or implicit memory. In this case, just think about the mirror drawing. It basically requires many, many training and practice. However, the situation is, in this case, it's quite rigid, and the motor performance is very tightly linked to the actual learning situation. So I still remember but actually it's just very easy. Just think about how you put on your coats. Okay, you put one of your hand and then the other. It's motor learning, it's a motor sequence. Just try once to do the other way around. Put your other arm first and try to do it. So this shows you that a motor sequence is very, very rigid, and it's not flexible, and it cannot be easily changed. So motor memories are requires training, but remain rigid. Every piano and dance teacher knows that the motor learning can be very easily disrupted by learning similar things. So if you learn a dance step and you practice it a lot, and then you learn a little bit similar thing, then it will disrupt the learning of the original steps, and the same thing with piano. And this is because the two learning overlaps and disturb each other. And as we know, this type of learning, however, can display plasticity, since if one part of your motor cortex is damaged, with time, the other parts of the motor cortex can take place. So after stroke, your arm can be absolutely motionless, but with time you can start again moving, because your motor map can rearrange and be able to do movement. So these would be the motor memory. And in sharp contrast, event memory, or explorative or declarative or explicit memories, these are actually dependent on the hippocampus. These doesn't depend on the hippocampus. It's most of the time requires only a single event, since if an event is important, you will remember for your entire life. It's much more flexible, so you can recall this event in absolute different situation. You can tell it to your parents at home, in a pub or in the university. So you can recall it in different situations. It's much more difficult to disrupt with different events, since by nature event memory has to remember sequential events. But there is no recovery, so if the structure which is dedicated to record the events, that is the hippocampus, is damaged, there is absolutely no recovery. And basically this is because the structure of the hippocampus is so unique that no other brain region is able to take over its role in establishing episodic memories. And finally, there is a strange type of memory which is somewhere in between the two, and this is the fear and the reward memories. It's in one sense, in significant cases, even a single association may be sufficient. Just think about a highly terrifying event. It can affect your entire life. Or think about an exposure to cocaine, and it can also alter your life for the life of your life. But in many times, it's and so in this case, it's similar to the even memory. But also, most of the time, it's tightly linked to the original situation. So if you have a fearful situation in one corner of the city, you will recall it most of the time when you walk through that region. And also a very significant feature of this memory is that it has highly pronounced vegetative output, meaning that heart rate, breathing, sweat, whatever is all the time changing, which is not the case with the other two. So what do we learn about these memory systems and where they are located? So we know now that the motor memory circuit involves the frontal cortex and of course the thalamus, which is linked to the frontal cortex, and two basic motor structure, the basal ganglia and the cerebellum. So in this loop, the frontal cortex, basal and thalamus loop, where motor memories are located, the this sign basically shows the regions where we know that plastic synapses are involved in establishing memories. In this case, it shows that in the frontal cortex, the cortico-cortical connections are of course plastic, so you can have LTP. The cortico-basal ganglia synapses is very famous, since all the metro-motor memories is gone if you block the corticostriatal pathway. And finally, now it's known that the tonocortical fibers can also display plasticity, and this is tightly linked to the motor learning. In case of the event memories, it's still in Hungarian, sorry. So this is the temporal cortex and the hippocampus, the associated thalamic parts, and the mammillary body, as I will show you immediately. And finally, in case of the fear memory, it's the amygdala, which is involved in the beside the thalamocortical loop, and amygdala has very pronounced output to the autonomic centers, and this is how the vegetative responses are performed. In this case, synapses are known to be plastic both in the amygdala and in the cortex. In the thalamus, it is still not started. So how they look like in the actual brain, and this is how the event memory system look like. It consists of the it's in the human brain, the hippocampus, which by the fornix project to the mammillary body, which project to the anterior thalamus, and then that project back to the parahippocampal and cingulate cortices. The funny thing about these structures are that these are called Papez circuit. Have you ever heard about Papez? So these interconnected structures, so hippocampus, cingulate cortex, mammillary body, together the structure which later turned about to be responsible for the event memories are called Papez circuit, and Papez actually studied the brain of patients who died in rabies. Do you know what rabies is? Rabies is Veselchik. So Veselchik or rabies is still the only disease in the world which is 100% lethal, right? So no other disease, even Ebola, is not 100% lethal. But once you got rabies and you are not treated you are not immunized, then you are sure you are dead. So there is no exception, and this is because the rabies is a transsynaptic virus, right? So it destroys one nerve cell, and then it jumps to the other one, it destroys that one. So that's why it's a transsynaptic virus. Of course, this was not known by Papez, but what he realized that when he dissected the brain of people who died from rabies, these structures which are gray here are dead together. And that's why he called them one system, and he called them limbic system. Probably you much better know the word limbic system. This is basically referred to the emotional brain, right? And the reason Papez saw that these parts of the brain is linked not only to memories but also to emotions is that the emotional life of patients in the last day of their life who got rabies is pretty much disturbed, right? What happens is that they show very strange symptoms, which is they avoid light, okay? So they don't they go out only in darkness. They show extreme hypersexuality and also hyperaggressivity. If you put these three together, then actually what you get is Dracula. So there is an idea that the idea of Dracula, who is of course avoids light and hypersexual and hyperaggressive, and the very reason that it's in Transylvania is that during the 16th century there was a very severe and serious rabies infection in Transylvania, so it was very, very common there. And since, of course, some of the people showed very similar behavior what in the story Dracula would do, this is why there is an idea that the idea of Dracula was basically coined based on these symptoms. But now, of course, you don't have to remember Dracula and the emotional brain, but also to the episodic memory system. Of course, episodes include the emotions as well, which are linked to this episode, and the two is stored together. So this is just an experiment showing that indeed not only the hippocampus but the subcortical structures are involved in decoding these memories. So it's a form or maze. It's a spatial navigation which obviously requires hippocampus, but it basically shows that if you lesion anterior thalamus, the spatial performance is impaired, similar than after hippocampal lesion. And the second memory system mapped onto the brain is the motor memory, where the neocortex projects first to the striatum or caudate putam, and then to the globus pallidus, then to the thalamus, and back to the cortex. And of course, this receives an input from another subcortical structure called substantia nigra, pars concopta. This provides a very dense dopaminergic input to this learning system. And basically, without this dopaminergic system, the entire thing is not working, as you know from Parkinson's disease, because during Parkinson's disease, these dopaminergic cells die, and this is why the emotions get worse and worse, and the people are not able to learn new memories. But finally, the fear system, which includes the prefrontal cortex, the amygdala, and the medial cortex. So in summary, basically, in this very short talk, I wanted to show you that the engram is represented at many levels in the brain, from the synapses to the systems. It's worth to study them at every level. We absolutely need tools to study and detect and change engrams, and there are dedicated brain regions and memory systems which are mainly responsible for recording specific type of engrams. And with this I would like to thank your attention.